with a chance to bring Tottenham Hotspur all the way back. Kane against Randolph, and he scores. And the darling of White Hart Lane might well have won this London derby for Tottenham.
The Fantasy Football Show.
November 2016, Wednesday the 2nd, 5:10 p.m. As night descends, a pink haze fills the sky in the distance. I'm on the North Circ to the east of the lane, and the cranes by the stadium fill the skyline as I wait impatiently for a bus. I've been down about Spurs this week, but now I'm in buoyant and expectant mood as I head past the lane from work en route to Wembley. I'm on a bus and away briefly until hit with a backlog of red lights known as traffic. No panic, there is time, but getting to Wembley during rush hour via bus, train and tube is the priority before the stomach even considers food. There's a negative feel around Spurs currently. Harry and Toby remain out, and only Harry seemingly has a chance of making Sunday's derby. We miss them both terribly. This is a monster part of the spine of our team gone. But defensively, we've done okay. Eric Dier's filled in during Toby's absence and gone largely unnoticed. No bad thing, but it's our creativity and conversion of chances that is causing concern. Since the interlull, 5 games played and Delhi's late equaliser at the Hawthorns is our only goal that wasn't a penalty. That is a desperately worrying statistic and we need to put that right tonight. We hold an acceptable position in our Champions League group after our draw in Germany 15 days ago. Second on 4 points, we lead Bayer by a point and CSKA by 2. We trail Monaco by 1, who lead the section. As I predicted from the start, the group has been very tight and we can expect another tough and tight contest this evening against a good side. Victory and our chance of qualification will look very strong with a 4-point buffer over Bayer with 2 to play. But lose and we are in trouble. A draw would not be a disaster, but it would be good to move on and get out of this group quickly. I expect changes tonight. Sissoko will surely play as he is available despite his domestic suspension. And I'm pleased that we'll have some direct running on the pitch. We need that threat, even if it may only be a threat. We lack pace desperately. All the other top sides have it, but we lack it. Sissoko may well have a clumsy touch and lack the technical ability of his colleagues, but he does offer us something different. I expect the fullbacks to be rotated, but the rest of the team would be guesswork. Will Poch risk the doctor when we surely need him on Sunday? Do Christian and Delhi need a rest? I don't know the answers. I only know I'll be in full support of whatever 11 start the game. But yes, I expect some rotation despite this being a Champions League night. Arsenal away will demand fresh bodies and fresh minds. With Chelsea now ahead of us and very much back in the chase for the title since their move to a 3-4-3 formation, we can ill afford to lose ground with some very difficult league fixtures on the horizon. As said numerous times, our ability to retain our place in next season's Champions League must be our priority. What we do in it is less important. That may sound incredulous and defeatist, but currently money dominates and the Champions League is where it's at. With the new stadium being built, we have to box clever. And the priority is keeping large parts of this team together and in the Champions League for when we arrive in our new arena. Plus, I do not want to be playing Europa League group games at Wembley next year. Sod that for a game of soldiers. Tonight will be different for us. Against Monaco, the scale of what was happening impacted us all. At Wembley, 85,000 Spurs fans breaking numerous attendance records back in the Champions League. It felt like an event, like it was something to hold on to and grasp. It wasn't the lane, but it was exciting. When I got off the tube, the sheer scale of support everywhere was astonishing. Wembley Way, decked out in white everywhere in glorious sunshine, was a wonderful sight. I fell into the same trap as everyone else, getting trigger happy with the phone, taking pictures as if we had never been here before. It felt like a historic moment. It must have for the players as well, but we forgot to win the football match. I'm sick and tired of walking out of Wembley beaten. I really want to win tonight. That may sound obvious, but as said, a draw tonight would not be a disaster. Winning, however, would shut up the naysayers who keep banging on about Wembley affecting us. Do it tonight and Wembley Way will be a joyous scene on the way out rather than the sombre stunned one after the defeat to Monaco. Tonight, there will be no clicking of the phone when I walk out and down the steps onto Wembley Way. I'm going to war. There is a football match to win and there is no other reason to be there. Tonight is not an event. It's Spurs in the Champions League and this time Wembley means nothing to me. If I stop before I enter the stadium, it will be to grab a burger. My phone will only leave my pocket to check on the team. The atmosphere should feel more like a football match as well. Even though they are a modest club by size, the Germans will bring a couple of thousand and some colour and noise. I like the Germans. I haven't got a bad word to say about them. Great football supporters. Forget all the rubbish of what happened 70 years ago. They're not responsible. They're good people. There will be zero threat of any trouble. The only trouble to ourselves tonight will be the opposition we face on the pitch. They're a good side, but not a great side, and we really should be looking to win this. 10:20 p.m. Well, that was a fucking unmitigated disaster. No invention, no pressure, no creativity, no ideas, just no. Beaten 1-0, not sure who scored, couldn't care less. Shite goal, conceded to a mediocre Champions League team. Here's the name and shame. Moussa Sissoko. What the fuck is this for an excuse for a footballer? He's quick and strong, so at least be quick and strong. Panic buyer, the fans are already turning against him. Heung-min Son, not good enough. Don't particularly want to blast a man. His goals were the difference between us winning and not winning games in September. But at the top level, not good enough currently. Christian Eriksen, the penny has dropped for Pochettino, substituting him for young Winksy just after we conceded. Eriksen is not doing enough. He doesn't have the arsehole for it. End of. The doctor was uninspiring and departed for Vinny after half hour, presumably because of injury, but as a team, we had been so bad in the opening stages that it could well have been tactical. I suspect this is an injury, and he's likely out for Arsenal away on Sunday, which is now beginning to look like a frightening prospect. Lamella may well be added to that injury list, and it's asking the world for Harry Kane to come back and save us on Sunday. We need men on Sunday. People will stand up and be counted. If that means getting Carter Vickers in the team and pushing Eric Dier back into midfield with Victor to have men in the centre of the park, that is what we should do. Right now, I can't see anything but defeat on Sunday, and that is a harsh prospect. As of now, we need to go back to basics and get back to what made us fall in love with this team in the first place. Bottle, intense pressure, athleticism and excitement. We look laboured and currently confidence is shot to pieces. I can't explain what has happened. Are we that reliant on Toby and Harry? We knew last season that we were weak beyond the strongest 11, but as of this moment, the strongest 11 looks weak. We are left right now with probably having to play whatever 11 are fit on Sunday in the North London derby. We are stuck right now in a rut and now we're praying that an unfit Harry Kane can score the goals that will save us. Win the league? Forget it. Until we get back to basics, we'll struggle to finish in the top four. Look at our competitors. Look at their most creative players. Kevin De Bruyne, Mesut Ozil, Eden Hazard, Philip Coutinho. And look at us with Christian Eriksen. More frightened of his own shadow than the opposition are of him. And we're left preying on a 20-year-old kid in Dele Alli to produce miracles. Of course he will have dips in form. Eriksen's excuse is his fourth season here. Step up, man. Last season we fell in love with this team, Eriksen included. We need a big performance Sunday going into the dreaded Interlol. League positions, the Champions League, it's all irrelevant until we start playing like we can again. November the 5th, 12 p.m. 24 hours to go. 10:20 p.m. I feel sick. I'm not ill. I just feel sick. I always do before this one. I don't enjoy the derby. I'm normally a wreck before, during and after, especially for the away game. I think at home I feel I can contribute. Not that my noise makes any difference to the result, but in my heart I feel I'm part of the game. Why not go away? I could have. I have enough loyalty points, but the away end at the Emirates is shite. Stadium looks great, I can admit that. But there is no steepness in that lower tier. Even in the back row, it's hard to make out the goal line at the other end. And by now, you should know with me that I want a perspective of the game, particularly this game. Not that tactics or anything like that are likely to be too important to me once kickoff starts. I hate Chelsea, I hate West Ham, but this will always be the game that matters most. If we are in the game, I will likely be swept up in the moment to do much more than drink and sing. Hopefully there'll be lots of jumping as well. Whilst I've said many times that both sets of supporters will be well advised to step away from the obsession with each other, tomorrow it matters. It really matters. Winning is everything, and winning there because it has been so rare would make it an all-time highlight. A where were you moment. Defeat is painful and the whole country believes it likely. The last time I went into a game thinking we would get beat, Liverpool last week with the kids, or Dortmund in March, I guess. But in the Premier League, probably not since this fixture, which was on the same weekend last season. In that time, we have been beaten only 5 times in the league. 5 times since the opening day of last season, in fact. Twice, inexplicably, by Newcastle United, away at West Ham and at home to Leicester and Southampton. None of the big sides have put us away in that time. None of them. Of the 4 away games against the sides currently above us, we scored first in 3 of the 4, and tomorrow's first goal will be crucial. We have to get it to stand a chance of winning the game. Right now, as a collective fan base, this is the lowest we have felt since defeat at home to Newcastle on my birthday in December. Forget the end of season defeats to Southampton and Newcastle. By finishing above the enemy, it mattered not a jot. The December defeat was the last time we were all wondering, are we good enough? The answer then was no, and the answer now is no. Having watched Chelsea destroy a good Everton side 5-0 to go top of the table, it's hard right now to foresee us finishing above them, Arsenal, Liverpool or Manchester City by the season's conclusion. Although City drew at home to Middlesbrough today, just as Arsenal did 2 weeks ago, so we are not alone in having bad results. I don't fear Arsenal tomorrow. They're of course a great side with players like Ozil and Alexis Sanchez who could kill us in a moment, but it's not them I'm worried about, it's us. I fear we aren't going to hurt them, that with the injuries the team picks itself and that they will know exactly how we're going to play. We've been predictable lately, but surely tomorrow we are going to be so up for this and we'll give them a game. We need our self-belief back. As fans, and perhaps on a day where this result means everything, we need to see a performance from our lads that gets us behind them again. Toby is out, as is Lamella. Sissoko is suspended, and although he wouldn't have started, Ben Davis is also out. Dembele is doubtful, which in the doctor's case normally means he is out. I'm not a doctor, but that is normally the case. But there is a positive. The goal machine is back. Whether Harry Kane can start tomorrow, I don't know, but his mere presence will worry them. 3 league games versus Arsenal, 4 goals scored. Those that suggested Harry needs dropping before his injury are now at the front of the queue, begging for his return, hailing him as a goal-scoring messiah. For me, he must start. We need him tomorrow. I don't know if he will start. It's 50-50, I guess. But he is our talisman, and it will give everyone a lift for sure if he's in the team. Sunday the 6th, 10:50 a.m. Just over an hour until kickoff, and I'm en route to the pub and ready to go. No matter how worried I may be, we can't go into this with a timid mindset. We wouldn't expect the players to, and so neither should we. Team news will be in shortly. The Independent have run a story suggesting that both Harry Kane and the doctor will start. If so, then suddenly we will begin with a team that is arguably our best, with the obvious notable exception of Toby. I feel Lamella will be a big miss with his pressing and ability to pick up space between the lines, but we are what we are. This is the most anxious wait for team news in a long time. If the doctor is unavailable, I would play 3 at the back. I think it's too much of an ask for Winksy to start. I have great faith in the lad, but today doesn't feel right to hand him a first league start. Although Poch has formed for this, giving Ryan Mason his full debut in his fixture just over 2 years ago. We lack width, but Carl and Danny give it to us. They could play as wing-backs and Yang could play as sweeper with Eric and Big Kev either side. Victor could protect in front, leaving Christian and Dele to both play where they want to in the centre of the pitch, and I would give Sonny free rein to roam behind Harry, if only this management lark was so easy. 11:05 a.m. Team is in, and both Harry and the doctor start. Good news, but Dele is out and not even on the bench, so Big Kev comes in. Is this 3 at the back, as I suggested? It's a big call to change formation so dramatically for such a big game, but this could be what we see. Or are we going for power? Will Eric Dier and Victor Wanyama both sit in front of a back four with the doctor further ahead at number 10? I love the doctor there. We just look so strong down the middle when that is the case. My gut is that this is 3 at the back, but this will be nice to have them second guessing. I myself have labelled us predictable, and this is not. Danny may even be pushed into a left wing position. There are possibilities to change, and in Vinny we do at least have a forward-thinking change on the bench, but I wouldn't be at all surprised if this starting 11 plays the first 80 minutes. It's strong physically and will need to be mentally. Make no mistake, despite all their boasting about what they're going to do to us, they have just seen Harry Kane's name on the team sheet and shit themselves. This is on. We can win this. Do not be afraid. Always, we must believe are Poch's words. Our team has a fresh look and feel to it. I feel positive. I would take a draw, but we can cause an upset here. To dare is to do. 12:50 p.m. Half time and we trail 1-0. It's 3-5-2 and we're playing fine. Kevin Vimmer had to get his head on the ball from an Ozil free kick and inadvertently headed in. Nothing in the game. Playing fine. This is far from a lost cause, but again, we are struggling to hurt the opposition and now chasing, we worry. If there is a concern with three at the back, it's that Carl and Danny cover so well and we are with them higher, inevitably short of pace defensively. Will they drop off and let us have it? The concern is my doubt as to whether we can open them up. 7 p.m. Drunk, and I should say from the outset, in front of me on the tube are two sleeping gooners. Somehow, I doubt they would have been that way had they won. Here's what makes sense now. Harry Kane equalised from the spot, and we were as close to winning as we were to losing. In my current state, nothing makes sense, but we stood up to them and deserved at least the draw we got. Tuesday the 8th, 6 p.m. We got our pride back Sunday. This was a team we could shout for, sing for and believe in. Anyone who says we weren't value for a draw is lying. Bar a 15-minute period towards the end of the first half, we were at least Arsenal's equal. During that period, they scored, or rather, we scored for them. There's been much debate about Big Kev's own goal and whether it should have stood. Even ex-referees have disagreed on the matter and it comes down to interpretation. I'll show my honesty here. I think it was the correct decision to allow the goal. The interpretation is important as this is decisive in whether to award the goal or not. The ruling now is that if a player makes a move towards trying to play the ball, they are deemed offside. Perfect case scenario a couple of weeks ago. John Stones had a goal disallowed for City against Southampton because before it reached the scorer, Sergio Aguero attempted to score with an outstretched boot. Correctly disallowed as despite Aguero not making contact, there was a clear attempt to play the ball. As Big Kev was forced to head the ball back towards his own goal on Sunday, two or three Arsenal players behind him were offside. The argument, of course, is that Vimmer had to head the ball because he could have had no knowledge in that moment if the players behind him were on or offside. The most likely beneficiary if Big Kev hadn't headed the ball was Laurent Koscielny, who was onside. There are a couple of key points here. Firstly, none of the players were in front of Big Kev and impeding his movement or sight. The second point is that none of the players have made a clear intention to play the ball. Reluctantly, that's why the goal had to stand. The rule, as Alan Shearer pointed out on Match of the Day, is an arse. But the interpretation of that situation on the day was correct. I have no qualms about it. The problem, as Shearer pointed out, is the rule is a farce. The opponents did influence Big Kev's decision to head the ball, and they have gained an unfair advantage being in that position. Those are the words that need to be put into a new rule that will trigger an understanding to its meaning. For me, if you were offside in the play but then score 5 seconds later in the same build-up, you have gained an unfair advantage. I understand all this bollocks about phase two, but it is clear often that even commentators haven't got a Scooby-Doo. Therefore, the armchair fan is left confused. Big Kev responded well to the moment. He had to head it, and it was just one of those things. Considering it was his first league start since April, his performance was commendable, particularly playing in the unfamiliar back three of which Super Yam was the standout performer. He has raised his game in the absence of Toby. God, more please, with or without Toby. The first half was even. Sonny had raced away early from Shotdran Mustafi with a great dummy and bar a crucial clearance from Nacho Monreal, Harry would have put us ahead. It was great to have Harry back. Sure, he was short of match fitness, but he got out there and put a shift in. His presence was enough to worry them, and we have lacked that threat. He was also desperately unlucky not to put us ahead with a flicked header from a Christian cross that went narrowly wide. As said, Arsenal picked up some momentum towards the end of the first half, mainly due to Sanchez's clever movement off the ball. He began to drift into the area between Kyle Walker and Eric Dier on our right side, which was often too big due to Kyle's advanced position. This was less of a problem on our left side due to Jan's positional diligence. For Eric, playing in his fourth different position of the season, this was more troublesome. Alex Iwobi tamely fired into the arms of Hugo when he should have done better. And the only other real scare was a venomous drive from Theo Walcott that smashed against the post. But we were largely untroubled. Arsenal's only other effort on target was a late header from sub Olivier Giroud, which was again straight at Hugo. In all, Arsenal had two shots on target and 44% possession throughout the game. We stifled them, and this was even more impressive in a formation that we had never used before, honestly never. We may have played three at the back at Watford last year, but that was 3-4-2-1. On Sunday, we played two up front, with Sonny often more advanced than Harry. Our equaliser arrived shortly after the interval. I was at the bar trying to get a round in as the doctor glided through the gears and into the area before Koscielny made contact and brought him down. In truth, Musa was heading into trouble and it was a daft challenge, but it was definite penalty. And fair dues to Mark Clattenburg, the ref we all love to hate, as it would have been easy not to give it. To be fair to Clattenburg, his fitness levels for a referee are very high, and being so close to the action puts him in a great position often to make the right call. The doctor was described by Poch after the game as a genius. He has such an influence over this team when he is on this form. The doctor was described by Poch after the game as a genius. He has such an influence over this team when he's in this form. He was majestic and brilliant throughout, and a joy to watch in this mood. I wonder in hindsight if he felt uncomfortable at Wembley and Poch took him off with the priority being Sunday. I finally got served as Harry put the ball down for the pen. I ordered, left £30 at the scene and dived back amongst friends and dad to see Harry nonchalantly fire the penalty down the middle to put us level. We could have nicked it as Eriksen's late in-swinging free kick from the left evaded everyone and came back off the post. Fine margins indeed, but there can be no complaints. We were short on confidence but stood up to them and looked them in the eye and were as good as them on their own turf. Pride has been restored going into the interlull and that was desperately important. West Ham on a Saturday night at the Lane is 11 days away and I can't wait now. Wednesday the 9th, 6:05 p.m. After an exhausting game on Sunday, the pub began to die down, and as we all caught our breath, I had the pleasure of sitting down around the table for half hour with Mr. Edwards, the father of exciting young hope Marcus. I first caught glimpse of Mr. Edwards, I'll save him the grace of keeping his first name private, during our romp of a win at Stoke where we serenaded him with songs about his boy. He was embarrassed but proud, I should imagine. In any case, I was introduced to him at half-time at a game on Sunday, and we ended up sitting down and having a beer together afterwards. Really likeable bloke who seems level-headed and is determined to keep Marcus's feet on the ground. All Dad and I wanted to do was ask about Marcus, get the detail of what it's like for the boy around the club. We got it all and more, really. Firstly, let's start with the sad news. Marcus didn't grow up as a Spurs fan, although the good news is his following was never for one of London's other clubs. You can probably guess from what I've said who he grew up supporting. But I'll save Marcus the grace of naming who it was. We found out Marcus has been with Spurs since 6 and importantly sees his future at the club. He's always been pushed to play in higher age groups and knows that the club have nurtured him in the right way. He has been well cared for now too. He has a great relationship with Poch, and Mr. Edwards told us glowingly that the doctor and Victor look out for Marcus like he's one of their own. Great to hear. Young Marcus is unlikely to grow much, family trait apparently, so he's likely to always be this diminutive figure. But the club want him to express himself and his talent. We were told that but for injury, Marcus would have started at Liverpool in the League Cup. Poch wanted to expose him to that kind of game and atmosphere. Mr. Edwards also told us that he will return to training soon, likely before the end of the month. I didn't shy away from the big questions when given the opportunity. I asked about his temperament and of course didn't expect any answer other than he is grounded, etc. But I also believed it. His father speaks about Marcus glowingly and proudly as you would expect, but also with authority. He has a calmness in his words that matches his son's calmness on the ball. I also voiced my concern about how Marcus would fit in with our pressing style. Again, I was met with a positive response that the young lad completely believes in Poch and what he is trying to do. There was laughter too during our chat. When Marcus first trained with the first team, his father asked him who the best player in the squad was. The response, I am. No shortage of confidence and there is no harm in that particularly, as we were told that Marcus's ambition is to be the best player in the world. His father said, Marcus believes he will win the Ballon d'Or one day. That is his ambition. Thing is, neither me or Dad questioned it. We kind of sat there and went with it, giddy at the excitement of what Marcus could possibly achieve in his career. The excitement around Marcus is unparalleled to anything else I have ever known with a Spurs kid, and the way our creative players have underperformed in the last month suggests that his time may be coming sooner than expected. Is Marcus ready? Probably not physically, but what he won't lack when he eventually does break into the team is self-belief. He already believes he is the best player and will be determined to prove it. It makes you wonder if we haven't bought an exciting attacking midfielder to not block his path to stardom. I don't know the answer, but you suspect it is possible. I don't expect Marcus to break into the team this year, maybe even not next season. But there's every reason to believe that by the time we move into the new stadium that he could be a serious member of our team. Friday 11th, 5:40 p.m. Remembrance Day, a time when we should all remember those that gave us the ultimate sacrifice to their country. I did my bit this morning, tools down just before 11 to disappear out of sight and pay my respects outside in silence alone. I've worn a poppy everywhere I've gone for the last couple of weeks, and rightly so in my opinion. It is a simple statement to say, I remember. Which is why it is so laughable that our footballers are being denied the opportunity to display the poppy emblem on their shirts this evening, especially in an all-British affair against the Scots. FIFA are denying both teams the right to wear the poppy on their shirts in case it is seen as a political statement. These people who govern football are so out of touch, you wonder sometimes how football has grown into the worldwide bastion of a sport that it is. Instead, tonight, both teams will defy the governance and wear black armbands with the poppy embroidered. All anyone is trying to do is pay their respects. Perhaps if they worried more about the people that matter in the game, the employees and their supporters, rather than a fucking dictatorship of money making, then they would earn some respect. As if anyone outside of Britain, from Germany to Guatemala, gives a fuck if British people want to remember the fallen. But we do want to remember, and will always remember. FIFA, UEFA, football governance should be about governing football and protecting it from illegal activities such as bungs, drugs and corruption. That's all we want. Keep football pure and it will make enough money for the fat cats. Instead, they're more worried about their image. Fuck your image when people want to respect those who had to go to war and die. They won't let us pay our respects, yet the main image you will see on the advertising boards around Wembley tonight will be for gambling companies, advertising gambling in front of thousands of children. You tell me if that is right, but those advertising hoardings will have to be a certain height under stadium regulations. I could rant all night about advertising and its exposure to vulnerable people and the way the game is governed, but there is, after all, a big game going on tonight. England versus Scotland, the old enemy meet in a competitive fixture for the first time in 17 years and on a Friday night. Exciting stuff. Except it's not. Or at least I can't motivate myself for it to be. Friday night, the working week is over and I should be heading down the pub with the lads for the game. But as said, it means little. We certainly don't want to lose to Scotland, but even if we do, we would likely qualify with ease. And that is even though, as a football nation, we are average ourselves. It just doesn't really matter. And this is the one England game you would expect to be up for. But I'm heading home, despite the fact the missus will be out on the lash with friends. I'll be alone, feet up, hoping that England put in a performance that doesn't send me to sleep. The biggest problem with international football is that no one wants it anymore. Certainly not now when our league is getting into full swing. I have a solution, but it will never take off. Monday the 14th, 5:25 p.m. More on England and Friday's dismal 3-0 win against Scotland to follow, but now I'm flying south on the tube to Victoria and excited, very excited. You may have heard me speak before about the brilliant Fighting Cock podcast. Well, they're recording at 6 and I'm en route. Unfortunately, it will only be a watching brief, but they'll be hosting a Tottenham legend today. Double winner and original Welsh wizard Cliff Jones. One of the old man's favourite ever players. Sadly, he won't make it tonight. But this felt like an opportunity too good to miss, to surround myself with Spurs people and listen to a legend speak at close quarters. I will know Rob White, who will be making an appearance on the pod. We play football together on Thursday nights. I made a successful return to action Thursday, although the arm is still not in a clever way. Rob is the son of another Spurs legend, John White, who so cruelly lost his life in his early 20s when he was struck by lightning on a golf course. Rob was still a baby, but his father has been immortalised as a legend of our history and our club ever since. There are plenty that say we would have won even more in the 60s were it not for the travesty that struck John White. Tuesday the 15th, 5:50 p.m. I felt truly privileged last night to be able to sit in and watch the Fighting Cock special with Cliff Jones. So rarely do you get the chance to sit down and be a part of something like that. Jones may have been a legend a good 20 years before I was born, but it was genuinely an honour to share a room with him and listen to how it was back then. The way he eulogised about men we consider legends, but to him they were friends and teammates. Anyone who knows football knows their names. Danny Blanchflower, Dave Mackay, Wyatt, Jimmy Greaves, to name only a few of what will almost definitely always be our greatest ever side, led by the meticulous Bill Nicholson, the man who made that team and our history. Cliff always refers to Bill, the leader of a team full of men and greatness. Now 82, and you wouldn't believe it, by the way, still fit as a fiddle. The memory might be going a bit, but you can see the sense of pride that Cliff feels when talking about those glory days and the love he still feels for Spurs. Even last night, in a room of seven, with nothing but four men round a table with a microphone and three listening on, I felt his pride as he sat there with the cockerel sitting proudly on his jumper. I don't know if it was a conscious decision as he was on a Tottenham supporting podcast, but I picked up on it. First thing I said to him was, it was an honour, as Rob introduced us. The second thing I told him was that my dad loved you. And the third thing I said was, still got the colours on then. Of course, said the great man. Marvellous. Genuinely, I was so chuffed to be a part of that last night. I went home with that happy feeling like we had just won. Last night was also about getting to see the podcast for me as well. This, of course, was a history lesson, and given the invite, I couldn't pass it up. The podcast has very much become a part of my week. I know the script. The first half will focus solely on thoughts of Spurs and what is current. Windy gives the halftime youth update, and the second half is a free-for-all about Spurs and whatever comes up. It's unpredictable and is made for people like me who want to listen to like-minded Spurs fans talking about their love of the club, their happiness and frustrations, and having a chat like they are down the pub. Meeting Flav was great. As the resident host, it feels like he's become a part of my life. In a way, a bit like a player, he is in my life, but not in my life, if that makes sense. There was a distance, and I respectfully kept mine during the pod. There were so many occasions when I knew I could add to the conversation and throw in my two pennies worth, but I kept respectfully quiet, of course. One of the things that I love about the pod is its brutal honesty. Yet Flav describes better than any of the multiple guests how Spurs resonates with him. I think he feels like me about the lane, an acceptance that where we are going is an unnecessary evil that must happen, but it hurts like hell to be leaving. It will never be the same. I told him last night over a beer that it feels like Armageddon to me, which I've written before, and of course it is not. But the agonising thought lingers, and I just don't want to imagine a future without the lane. I can't imagine a future without the lane. Even last night, hearing Cliff Jones speak about the glory nights and how he felt walking out as a player in front of that partisan crowd was my goosebump moment. To feel the noise like the night we beat Polish champions Górnik 8-1 in European Cup in 1961, when Glory Glory Hallelujah was born, was, in the Welsh Wizard's own words, incredible. In my heart right now, I'm not sure the atmosphere we felt against the reigning European champions Inter in 2010 can ever be replicated in the new stadium. A night when Gareth Bale, amongst others, tore them to shreds, and it felt like when the Spurs go marching in had the stadium structure shaking. The noise, the harmony that night, they can never take it away from me. It was my Górnik night, the I was there night in our modern history. Will I ever meet Flav again or be part of the podcast? I doubt it, but I would love to be on it and don't think I would be out of place. Nevertheless, it was great to have a brief chat with the man behind the mic about our club. Thursday the 17th, 5:50 p.m. On Tuesday night, something amazing happened. England played football and the nation enjoyed it. Go back four nights previous and we beat Scotland 3-0, yet it was largely depressing. I was unmoved when we scored our goals despite almost identical assists from Carl for Daniel Sturridge and Danny for Adam Lallana. Gary Cahill's third gave the scoreline a lopsided expression that this had been won easy. It wasn't. The Scots played as well as they could, yet still lost 3-0 to a mediocre England, inspired only in patches by the marauding raids of Danny and Cole down the flanks and the energy and invention of Lallana, who right now is England's best player. The game was irrelevant to us, as is the majority of international football. I don't blame the players for being under par. When you can be shit and still beat your closest rivals 3-0, what is the motivation? There is none for us either as supporters. How can there be when the opposition's best player, Robert Snodgrass, plays for Hull City? Yet on Tuesday it was different. From minute one we were at it against Spain, playing with pace on the counter, incisive passing and with aggression in pressing without the ball in the opposition half. This was good from England and tactically from Gareth Southgate. Our 2-0 lead, given to us by Lallana and Jamie Vardy, was cancelled out by two late goals by Iago Aspas and Isco, and it was disappointing, but only because we had played well as a cohesive team for a change and merited victory. For a small moment, the England football team mattered again. The players had shown commitment and bravery in their play, and thus I felt pride in them. This was a friendly, played with tempo and enjoyable. The Scotland game, the qualifier, felt like a friendly. Why? Quality of opposition. Remember how well we played in Berlin against the Germans in March? The players were motivated and it showed. It was the same against Spain on Tuesday. 8:15 p.m. Although I enjoyed the game on Tuesday, I still resented it. When I saw the England team, I said out loud to myself, why the fuck is Danny Rose playing? With Ben Davis on the sidelines for a couple of weeks, we need Danny fit for a massive week that we have coming up. I didn't want him to risk injury playing an international friendly, and it shouldn't be like that. I should be reveling in the fact that during 2016, Danny Rose has established himself as clear first choice for England at left back. My solution to the resentment is to scrap international football during the club season and make an event of international football in the summer. The argument against the summer qualifying programme is that the players play enough. I agree, but no international calendar would mean the club season could start later and finish earlier. The Mickey Mouse teams would have to pre-qualify, and you could have groups of four, five at the most if you were to only play each other once, and have qualifiers for the following tournament the next year done and dusted in 3 weeks. Shit or bust, and the games would mean something. It would close our season and be something to look forward to. No more games against the likes of San Marino, for whom, and I mean this with the best of respect, need to play teams at their level, the Gibraltars and the like. The benefit for them? They might get to feel the glory of winning a football match, rather than having 11 men behind the ball trying to keep the score respectable. International football being played at the end of the season will never take off, but it is an idea that has legs. We would all look forward to seeing our country play, as we wouldn't have for 10 months. And now we don't. We resent it. International football for fans of any challenging club has become a nuisance, and in terms of importance to us, it has become the Johnson's Paint Trophy of elite level football. I want watching England to matter again and the players to feel honour in playing for us. I'm sure they do, as Danny typified again on Wednesday, but club football has now far surpassed international interest. Saturday 19th, 7:45 p.m. There was a minute to go and we were 2-1 down. I sat pensive. The game was away from us. We hadn't played well and were losing to them at the Lane. The last time ever we would host that mob from the East in our home. I thought back to all the late winners we seemed to get against them. It felt like I was calling on previous spirits from the past. Wonderful late winners that sent us Abe, Paul Stalteri, Gareth Bale, Eric Dyer. But these were all at Upton Park. There was Harry's 95th minute equaliser 2 years ago at the Paxton to remember, and with a minute to go I sure as hell would have taken an equaliser. And we got it. Sonny's cross palmed out into the path of Harry, who tapped in. Relief. But then, a minute later, and Sonny was felled in the box from a similar position on the left. Penalty! The fourth official raises 6 minutes of injury time as Harry grabs the ball. The old man put his arm around me. This was massive. Could this be another incredible late winner against the Hammers? We all held our collective breath and prayed Harry would do the rest. You don't doubt Harry though, and he smashed the ball hard and low into the corner, his favourite side, to the keeper's right. Pumped fists everywhere. We'd won it surely in injury time against their mugs again. The remaining 5 minutes of injury time saw Winston Reid dismissed for two bookings, but the added time passed without goalmouth incident and we had claimed a vital victory. Pure joy. Now is not the time to go into the ins and outs of how we got into that position in the first place. When you equalise in the 89th minute and win it in the 90th, the only thing you can do is celebrate, because no matter what has gone before, that is the ultimate way to win a football match. And I'm off to celebrate. Monday 21st, 5:50 p.m. When I saw the team before kickoff on Saturday, I was pretty sure we were playing with a diamond. If I could see it from the lineup, I'm pretty sure West Ham manager Slaven Bilic could see it too. In Pochettino's reign, I could only recall one previous occasion when we played with a midfield diamond in the latter stages at home to Manchester City in a game we were trailing 1-0 in April 2015. It didn't work then and it didn't work on Saturday. The diamond lasted 35 minutes before it was shelved. For the first time in a long time, I felt like Poch had got this badly wrong. We trailed to a Mikel Antonio header after we had again defended a corner poorly. We lacked inventiveness and creativity and never threatened. Again, it felt like an attempt to get Eriksen into his best position, but it failed. He doesn't pick up space between the lines as well as Dele or Eric Lamela, and currently is suffering a severe loss of form. His creativity currently is non-existent, and it appears he has lost all belief to find an incisive forward pass. He is now at the stage where his place in this team should be brought into question. Eriksen was not helped by playing in a static team with little attacking energy off the ball. Winksy made a first league start to the left of the doctor, with Victor Wanyama patrolling behind him, and neither Danny or Carl could bomb up the wing as much as we would have liked. The front two of Harry and Vinny was a failure. I think they can play together, but with Harry deeper at 10. Vinny tries his hardest, epitomised by one passage of play after our first equaliser, where he attempted four tackles in quick succession with the crowd roaring its approval, and he did have a significant role in that very equaliser. But his general play and threat is no more than mediocre currently. There was no sign of a link-up with Harry. I can't recall them combining often, and as of now, we need to go back to Kane up front alone or with Sonny alongside if we are to play three at the back. To give Poch his dues, he was quick to scrap the diamond, and although playing Winksy on the right when we reverted to 4-2-3-1 was not ideal, it did give us balance and a more customary feel. The easy solution would have been to take Winksy off and replace him with Sonny, but what would that have done to the confidence of the kid? So, no, Poch stuck to the 11 he started with, and Winksy would go on to claim a deserved man of the match that included a joyous moment he will remember forever. The change in formation got us higher up the pitch, and Danny put in a cross which Vinny controlled and slammed towards goal from the angle. Dan Randolph in the West Ham goal saved, but could only palm the ball into the path of Winksy, who could barely believe his luck, and he tapped home to bring us level down below me at the Paxton. Winksy ran off like a madman. You could see written all over his young face what this meant to him. First league start, first goal, and against a team we love to hate, to draw us level for his and our team. He ran as hard as he could, straight into the arms of Poch, with the players and subs joining in. You could see what the moment meant to them and the joy they felt for their young teammate. I felt the same. It means so much more when someone like Winksy scores. He is another one we can generally call one of our own, and the desperation for him to do well is magnified in our hearts. It's so rare in the modern game to have a player who not only comes through the academy, but also clearly loves the club. The way it's going, half of the boys in North London will be getting called Harry. With more than half hour to go, we knew after Winksy had drawn us level that there was more than enough time to go and win the game. The crowd were up and we had them on the rack. Eric Dyer beautifully met a header from another wonderful Danny Cross, and I think I shouted goal louder than when we did score. Eric did everything right heading down, but somehow Randolph kept it out with an outstretched foot. Our tails were up and suddenly we were playing with pace, yet still with the same 11 that had started the game. Then out of nowhere, West Ham were awarded a penalty. Vinny pulled Winston Reid in the box, and with Mike Dean as ref, that was daft. Any other ref and it wouldn't have been given, but if Dean sees it, he will give it. Even before the new legislation on holding was introduced this year, it felt like he gave more penalties than anyone else. Manuel Lanzini sent Hugo the wrong way, and for the first time in the league this season we had conceded twice. The stadium fell quiet. All our momentum had gone. Delhi replaced Vinny, and shortly afterwards Sonny replaced the doctor, with Winksy reverting to a more natural position alongside Victor. West Ham could have wrapped up the game on the counter, but didn't. And although it seems as if the game was beyond us, you just know now that this team and these players will never give up. Sonny was disastrous when he came on. There was an ironic cheer when he first found the white shirt, but no one will remember it now. They will remember that his impact changed the game. The one thing that he gives us is energy and the threat to run beyond, with and without the ball. His willingness to run down blind alleys is infuriating, but has its moments, and it was the Korean's cross from the left into the corridor of uncertainty that caused enough problems to allow Harry to tap home and equalise. No fuss at that moment. Previous Spurs teams may have gone mental over that equaliser, but not this one. Harry clenched a fist, got the ball and ran back to the halfway line. The mentality was to win the game, and the crowd were up again. Winksy won the ball and drove forward, emphasising the mentality, and Christian contributed. For all his knocking, he now had a willing runner in Sonny, and that made a difference. Sonny took the pass, and as he hit the byline, stopped and invited a reckless and daft challenge from West Ham sub Harvard Nordveld. I'll be honest, I didn't think it was a pen, but having seen the replays, it clearly was, and credit to Dean for giving it. As Harry put the ball on the spot, "Come on, you Spurs," swirled round the ground in anticipation, and Harry buried the penalty to release a crescendo of noise inside the lane. What a comeback, one for the ages that we will always remember, and a sort of result that sweets belief for a team and its supporters. I'd almost forgotten that Reed was sent off in injury time for two late bookings. It seemed irrelevant. I trusted the lads to see it through once we were ahead. Only Leicester have taken something off us when we've gone ahead in a game this season. Yet we've come back and taken a point from losing positions against Everton, Liverpool, West Brom and Arsenal. And now on Saturday we trailed twice and won. But we can't continue like this. In 5 of our 12 games we've been behind, so to remain unbeaten and be back at 2 points per game, 24 on the board from 12 played, is great. The target in the next few weeks is to get through this period of Chelsea away, Swansea at home and United away and still be on 2 points per game. That means taking 6 points, winning either at Stamford Bridge or Old Trafford and making sure we dispatch Swansea. Tough ask, and we have to improve to achieve that. Still offer me 5 points now and I would admittedly take it knowing we would have back-to-back home games against Hull and Burnley to follow. We've only played well in patches. Sunderland at home, City at home were good performances. If we can stay in and around the pack ahead of us and can improve, then we could be a frightening prospect for everyone. First, however, we can only focus on the next game, and that means correcting the mess we've got ourselves into in the Champions League. Fortunately, we're away tomorrow. I can't say Wembley has infused anybody. And a trip to beautiful Monaco should suit us. They have shown domestically and in Europe that they have dramatically improved from the side we played in the Europa League last year. But we must believe that we can go there and win. And to be honest, we need to. Tuesday night in the Champions League in the pub. Hopefully not for the last time. Tuesday 22nd, 9:50 p.m. We are out of the Champions League. Tonight's piss-poor 2-1 defeat at Monaco means that 85,000-plus will attend Wembley in 2 weeks' time for a Europa League qualifier against CSKA Moscow. Yay! What a fucked-up prospect. Right, now I'm seriously questioning Pochettino. Honestly, for the first time I'm thinking, what the fuck was that? I think it was a Christmas tree formation, but again it didn't work. What is this? Why are we changing from what we are good at? We got well beat again by a mediocre Champions League team. I'm angry, really angry. Why do we work so hard to get here, only to play a must-win game and rest Jan? Rest for what? I've been a critic of Jan, but in Toby's absence he's really stood up. And we rest him? We treated the Champions League like a Europa League campaign and got what we deserved. I'm fucking livid. I could only think that this diamond or three central midfielders is a prelude to a formation that Poch believes will dismantle Chelsea on Saturday, like the 4-1-4-1 at Middlesbrough and in Moscow felt like a setup to murder City. Let me be clear, if we play a diamond or 4-3-2-1 Christmas tree or whatever the fuck that was at Chelsea on Saturday, we will get absolutely fucking murdered. I don't mean beat, we will get fucking annihilated. I cannot fathom what Poch is trying to achieve. Three at the back? Fine. Three central midfield players with none capable of getting ahead of the ball? Stop this now. Saturday, we apply 4-2-3-1 or we get shat on. With Danny suspended, we have no one who can play the left wing back role, so we go unpredictable. But with a system we know and fight with, I'm angry with Poch and that is dangerous, frightening. We have to go back to basics. Wednesday 23rd, 6 p.m. Where to start? I don't know. The Champions League campaign has left a sour taste. I feel empty at analysing what we have produced in the competition we are told is the be-all and end-all. Getting in it has for the main part been our goal for the last 10 years, but as I said months ago, we had no chance of winning the competition. I want to move on and quickly, but to what? Qualifying again? Ultimately that is the goal. Despite remaining unbeaten, winning the league looks increasingly unlikely. We're not good enough. We badly need a player who can unlock doors. We played against one such player last night, Monaco's Bernardo Silva. Go and get him. Go and get someone who can give us that spark. I fear our team has been found out, a collective unit who with everyone fit can hang with the best, but with any injury to any key personnel, we are in trouble. We missed the doctor at the start. Then we were without Harry. Now we are without Toby. We can't live with that. I have some sympathy for Poch for trying to find solutions and for attempting to adapt, but it has gone overboard. For all the excitement in beating West Ham, we were lucky and played poorly. Last night, we met a half-decent side and were convincingly outplayed. It's depressing. We are so lacking in individual quality and as a unit going forward that it is sapping our confidence. Add the defensive fragility we showed last night and confidence drains away. As I said after the game, playing without Jan was bizarre. I don't understand the decision. He's played well in Toby's absence and we were all at sea without him and without Kyle at right back. Having got back into the game with half hour to play with yet another penalty scored by Harry, we then fell behind again straight from the kickoff. 38 seconds was all it took, to be precise. It was something you would expect from an old Spurs team, but not this group. Within seconds of our equaliser, Danny is doubled up against, and yet they still had a man spared to score at the back post. How? Both fullbacks were left hopelessly exposed by our narrow midfield. Our confidence is shot. Vinny is taken out of the firing line, and despite Christian not performing well, we are out of options for someone who can do a job out wide in the continued absence of Eric Lamella. We can't rest Dele, as he at least provides a threat, even when underperforming, as proven by the way he expertly brought the ball down to win our penalty. Sonny is unintelligent with the ball, but offers good movement in behind. Those three need to start behind Harry at Chelsea, with Victor and Musa behind. Harsh on Winksy, who performed well again last night, but we need men and protection for the back four on Saturday. Musa Sissoko is shit. I have nothing further to add. Neither GK or Josh are ready to play regularly. Danny is suspended after five bookings, and unless Ben makes a recovery, we will presumably have to play Jan or Big Kev at left back. Saturday at Chelsea is looking like a daunting prospect. Thursday 24th, 5:50 p.m. Our support is currently and rightly pissed off. Saturday's performance at Chelsea is now huge, as I can feel a turning against Pochettino. I read one blog today claiming that our football is pedestrian and boring. Currently the claim has some credibility, but the assertion that we would be better off without Poch is by some distance wide of the mark. In my opinion, he's been attempting to find a solution to make us more of a threat and dangerous. It hasn't worked and instead appears to have caused confusion for several players. The team selection in Monaco was crazy. Leaving out Jan, Kyle and to a lesser extent Christian was an unwise decision that has backfired spectacularly. The competition has been treated with contempt throughout and Poch's comment that we would be better off in the Europa League has certainly not helped. The claim being that we need a bigger squad. We don't. We need a better squad. Only Victor has added any quality to a side that we knew from the back end of last season would struggle in the absence of key players. The signings of Sissoko, Vinny and Nkudu have improved nothing and at a cost, by the way, of over 50 million. That being said, people with short memories, we were lauded throughout the second half of last season for being entertaining and for challenging for the league. Yes, we are in a bad place currently, but we go into the final weekend of November unbeaten in the league, and yet we are not playing well. That is a remarkable achievement that we should be proud of, even if there have once again been far too many draws along the way. Priority for our football club is to finish in the top four. If we do that this season, it will be a remarkable achievement. People are quick to forget that we are punching above our weight. Currently, we should be finishing sixth in the league, yet we haven't finished below sixth since 2009 and have finished above sixth in all but one season since. We are a football club trying to sustain ourselves at a level above where our financial status sits. There are five other clubs in the league who far outstrip us in terms of wage expenditure, and yet we continue to challenge. Poch is trying to change our mentality, to make us act like a bigger club than we currently are. It hurts to say, but currently compared to what the other five spend, we should not be competing for the league. Yet if we grab an unlikely victory on Saturday, Monaco is forgotten, and then we will genuinely be in the title race. Everyone wants success now. It is the modern world, not just a problem in football. I, like everyone else, know it has been far too long for us without a trophy, but we're going for a huge upheaval at our club with the new stadium, and if we can continue to punch above our weight and finish the season in the top four, that would honestly be a miraculous achievement in my opinion. We will likely start the game Saturday with a team which will cost around the same as one Paul Pogba. That is what we are competing against, and yet we are better than United, and on our day with a full strength side, a match for anyone. This is an appropriate time to take stock, stop the bickering and realise that the journey we went on last season was fantastic and in the short term unlikely to be repeated, yet we are still unbeaten. What I want on Saturday is to see us go out there and be brave and play with unrivalled commitment. If it means we come up short with no recognised left back, no Toby, no Lamella, Dele and Harry playing at half capacity, then so be it. What hurts now is the distance we feel from the players and management again, a feeling that last year grew to a level unprecedented in the modern era. We need to build blocks to restore that, but also with a hint of realism that on Saturday at least, we face a huge task to stay unbeaten. We need to stay with this team, and as I said previously, we need to go back to the solid platform that the players understand, and that means Poch needs to stop experimenting and play 4-2-3-1. Friday 25th, 11:55 p.m. Christmas party is still going on, but I'm done. It gives you an indication of what a shit company I used to work for that tonight was the first Christmas party I've ever been to that I was invited to. Normally I have to crash into them. I could have stayed long into the night in the city, but you make choices. One was to eat the lot of a paid for three course meal, which for me is game over. When I'm out drinking, dinner ends the night. In other words, it's a kebab after Spurs have played and I'm done drinking. But there's also more drinking to be done tomorrow. For me these days, Spurs is the only time I do drink, and Chelsea away means a guaranteed session down the boozer. So how do we stop them? Since changing to a 3-4-3 formation, Chelsea have become an unstoppable juggernaut under Antonio Conte. Six played since the change in formation and the results, 2-0, 3-0, 4-0, 2-0, 5-0, 1-0. Six wins, 17 scored, none conceded. It looks ominous, and from nowhere they currently top the league. They've found a system that has a revitalised front three in Pedro, Diego Costa and the often unstoppable Eden Hazard. Two athletic wing-backs who can get up and down in Marcus Alonso and Victor Moses, and a back three that is swept by David Luiz, who despite the sideshow Bob Gimmick is performing consistently well, with the assistance of Gary Cahill and Cesar Azpilicueta either side, and with a decent keeper too in Thibaut Courtois. N'Golo Kante and Nemanja Matic will play in midfield. That is the 11 we will face tomorrow, and we know it. So much for unpredictability and changing formations. Conte tried to adapt Chelsea. It didn't work, and now they play to his beat in the formation he prefers. Tellingly, so far, no team has found an answer to counter it. And their last two home games, 4-0 and 5-0 wins against Manchester United and Everton, respectively, tells you all you need to know about the task that awaits us. It shows that familiarity is no bad thing in a system that works, and as I keep saying, 4-2-3-1 works for us. It is not in the big games where the formation has come up short. It is in the games against mediocre opposition where we struggle to create. That is the time to adapt. Against sides who will play a system designed to stop us, that is when to change if need be, to find a solution during a game if our preferred system is not working. Chelsea will adapt nothing to counter us tomorrow. They will believe that their system will beat us. We need to fight fire with fire and play with a system that breeds confidence in our own. Jan should be the choice at left back due to how comfortable he is on the ball and how he can move forward with it. Eric and Big Kev, though not ideal, should play at the heart of the defence with the instruction to retain the ball where possible, but to play like out and out defenders dropping off and defending the box. Victor and Musa should also play deep in front, with Musa tasked with driving us on as he did at the Emirates. Dele plays behind Harry, and we work at getting that pairing firing again, with Dele supporting and running beyond at every opportunity, but dropping deep without the ball, and when the ball retention is critical. Christian should play from the left, with the intention to roam when we have it, but to protect Jan when we don't against the pace of Moses, making him come inside where technically he's not at his best. The key to winning this is to cheat with Sonny, to free him from defensive responsibility to attack their vulnerability, the area between Alonso and Cahill, where the England defender is not comfortable being dragged to the left-hand side. When I say cheat, I mean not defend, cheat. Genuinely, I mean that. I want Sonny to occupy positions that allow us to counter with pace and expose what I believe is the weak spot. Chelsea attack with five. We will always have enough back to cover, and taking up this space will also make Alonso think twice. There is our blueprint to win the game and in our best formation. Wednesday the 30th, 5:55 p.m. When we win, I want to write. When we lose, I don't. I wasn't distraught in any way after Saturday's 2-1 defeat at Chelsea. In fact, I spent the first half thoroughly enjoying myself. There had already been a large amount of spilled drink from a disallowed fourth minute goal from Harry that was correctly judged offside, but only 7 minutes later we were ahead through a fantastic left foot strike from Christian, who at last delivered something of note. It was deserved, and we went on to dominate the half in its entirety, But a second goal proved elusive, and when Pedro scored an exquisite equaliser with just about the last kick of the half, there felt an inevitability about what would follow. Chelsea improved and won the game with a goal from Victor Moses when the presence of a dribbling Diego Costa and a supporting Eden Hazard had left us woefully out of position. When Costa crossed from the left, Moses was left with the simplest of chances. From there, we couldn't find an answer and created nothing noteworthy to mention. Each substitution made us weaker, yet fresh legs were needed as we tired. It epitomised once again the gulf in quality between the strongest 11 and what we had in support. We started with the 11 I had suggested and in a 4-2-3-1. It was what I'd asked for, and the first half showed once again that this is our strongest formation for our group of players. Big Kev played at left back and did okay, with Jan playing centrally, and for the majority Christian played from the right with Sonny on the left, but otherwise this was the back to basics formation we required. Our three subs were Winksy, Vinny and GK, and though none were poor, when they came on I couldn't help but feel, as I have said, that each change left us weaker. Moussa Sissoko did not even make the bench despite Eric Lamella's continued absence, and Poch confirmed that he was left out for tactical reasons, which suggests his Spurs career is already in a dire situation. Like at Arsenal though, there was at least encouragement to take from the performance, and the reason we lost was because of a decisive lack of quality. In a couple of key areas. It is why we now find ourselves 7 points from the top and with a gap opening up between us and fourth.
The Fantasy Football Show. Hey, I'm sorry.